Okay, we are recording. So, welcome everyone. I'm really happy that we have Cindy Rivka Marshall here with us tonight. I have known Cindy since, we think it's probably about 1989. We were in a group together of women sharing our stories. It was a sort of a beginning time for both of us and went on for quite a few years. And we've stayed in touch pretty well ever since, and I've watched her come out with some wonderful, three wonderful CDs that won Parents' Choice Awards and Storytelling World Awards, and watched her do wonderful performances in various places, and then was so happy that she got a wonderful studio in Needham, which she still has, called the Dancing Tree Story Workshop, and I've been there a number of times where we've coached each other, and she also holds workshops there quite often, and it's become a very nice place for the community, people who want to lead things or do story coaching. It's a very creative approach. And she also has been a leader in the Jewish storytelling world around here, and has been working in a synagogue. I know we worked together on some of the stories that she's brought there, the Boston Synagogue, and has been working on a story-based approach to a program called Caring Core with fourth graders and their parents, and has been blogging on this, and some of us read her blogs and thought, this is healing story at its best, and we don't often enough do things for young people on this teleconference, so I'm really pleased that tonight we're doing something to help help us help young people to be compassionate, caring listeners. And so, Cindy, I'm going to mute myself and turn it over to you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Elisa Permain, and also to Allison Cox for inviting me to do this. And I'm really delighted to be here, so thank you. I thought I would tonight talk for about 30 minutes or so, and then we'll open it up to questions. And I'll be talking about my use of story in an educational setting, but I think it's really applicable to other settings as well. And there's three different ways that I'm going to talk about tonight different ways I have used story in this educational setting. One has been to introduce a theme. One has been to elicit stories through interviewing, through asking questions. And the last is using story to reflect and to kind of summarize an experience. So as Elisa started to explain, I was approached about almost 5 years ago to consult with a synagogue in the Boston area where I live. And they were looking to innovate. They wanted to try something new, and they had an idea they were hoping to bridge the school, which is a school, like a supplemental school in the synagogue. Kids just go there twice a week after school or on the weekends. And they wanted to create more of a connection between that educational program and the congregation, because they seemed to be somewhat in what they would call silos. They were in separate kind of realms, and the families, the parents of the kids going to the school, didn't necessarily get involved in the congregation and vice versa. So I thought it was really exciting, and I was delighted they invited me in. I, prior to that, I've worked for many years as a storyteller, and I was invited into synagogues because I sort of have a niche in Jewish storytelling. And I, you know, at first it would be more like performing, presenting story programs, but more and more I was asked to do different kinds of workshops, and I found more and more ways to apply the use of the tool of story in all sorts of ways. So what I immediately thought about was, okay, if they wanted to connect congregants with the school families, it would be one way to do that would be to share stories. Now, the education director at the time, this is at Temple Sher Tikva in Winchester, Massachusetts, she had the idea to pair a class, like the fourth grade and their parents, with a committee in the synagogue. And the committee that she chose to start with was the caring committee. So like in many congregations of different faiths, there are structures within the congregation to support people in times of need. And, you know, if someone's ill, arranging for volunteers to give rides or bring meals. If someone suffers a loss, a death in the family, you know, a way to, again, bring them meals and help support the family. So the fourth grade in that first year became the Caring Corps, C-O-R-P-S. And so what I suggested, it was a way to bridge the, we had the committee, which were a group of members who were mostly with older children. They didn't necessarily have children in the school. And we invited them to come into the school and be interviewed. And they were interviewed both about how the committee works, those who were volunteers on the committee, what do you do, what is a caring committee. But we also invited the recipients of care, so members who had, you know, been on the receiving end of meals provided for them or other ways that they had been supported by other members through this caring committee. But in order to prepare the young people, the fourth graders, for this experience, I knew I had to introduce first this whole theme of caring and compassion. And so what better way to introduce a theme than to tell them a story? So I met with the kids first, and I started off with telling them a story, which I thought I would tell you a sort of shorter version of it. So I'm just going to go into that story first right now and then tell you how I used it a little more. There was once a princess who had never cried. She never had any reason to cry. Every need was taken care of from the time she was a little baby. She was picked up before she could cry. She was fed before she could cry. And as she grew, there were always hands there waiting to catch her before she fell. As she got a little older, if the princess wanted a toy, well, she was given a whole playroom full of toys. If she wanted a book, well, here's a whole library of books. And this princess, her name was Shayna, she began to get entitled. She wanted all sorts of things, and she kept testing her parents, the king and the queen, to see if they could get her more and more outrageous requests. Until one day, the princess, now getting quite a bit older, she said to her parents, "I want to see God." Well, the king and the queen looked at each other. They weren't sure what to do. They weren't sure how to meet this request. So the king did what he always did when he had a problem. He consulted his advisors. And the first one he asked was the Minister of Knowledge. And the Minister of Knowledge said, "Princess Shayna, come with me. I will show you." And he brought her up this spiral staircase up into the highest tower in that palace, and he opened a heavy door, and inside that room there was a very large book. And he said to her, "If you read this book, why, it has all of the laws of the land, then you will see God. But Princess Shayna didn't want that. She said, no, I don't want to read an old book. I want to see God. Well, next, the king asked another minister. This was the minister of the treasury. And he said, oh, come with me. And he took Shayna down, down, down a spiral staircase, very low down in the bottom depths of the palace. There was a door. And he unlocked this heavy door. And inside that room, why, she was blinded by the sight of piles and piles of gold. Just look here at all of this gold, and you will see God. I don't want to see a bunch of gold. I want to see God. Well, now the king and the queen began to look themselves. They weren't really sure where to look. They went into the royal bookshelves. They went into the royal cupboards. They looked in the royal drawers, but they didn't really know what they were looking for, and they could not find God. They went out into the royal garden and looked under the royal bushes and the flowers, and still they could not find God. Finally, after much asking about, the king met a wise man, and he asked him to please come and help. Well, this old man came to the palace, and they brought him up to the princess's chamber, where she was sitting in front of her mirror, admiring her reflection. And the old man said, Princess Shayna, if you just come over to this window, tell me what you see. Well, she went over and she looked and she said, oh, I can see my reflection in the window. Yes, but look through the window. What do you see out there? Well, I see other people. Good. My dear, this man says that he is going to show you God. Okay, well, show me. Fine, come with me. And he led the princess out of the palace and down a long road. She had hardly ever left the palace. And after a while, they came to a place where there was a broken down house. The old man said, go and knock on that door. Well, the princess was uncertain. The old man sat down in the yard to wait, and she walked up the rickety stairs, and she knocked, and she could hear children laughing inside. And then a girl answered the door who was maybe the same age as Shayna. She was balancing a little baby on her hip. She said, come in. Well, Shayna walked into this little one-room house. She'd never seen a place like this. There was hardly any furniture. And the girl welcomed her to sit down at the little table, and she said, I could give you a glass of water. It's all I have. We don't have any food, but my parents are going to come back in a while, and hopefully they'll have some. And the girl kept on tickling her little brother, trying to get him to laugh. She explained, I'm trying to keep distracting him because we're both so hungry. Well, Shayna sat there with them, and she found herself laughing with them. It was fun to be with them, and after a while, when she realized how hungry they were, well, she had this strange sensation in her eyes. She said, you know, my throat is a little scratchy. I think I'd better go home now. Will you come back and play with us again? I will, Shayna promised. And she left and started walking away from that house. The old man caught up with her, and she said, you know, I was thinking, do you think I could come back here and maybe bring them some of my clothes? And do you think maybe I could bring them some food and some toys and some books? I'd like to do that. The old man said, I'm sure you could do that. Shana, I think you're ready now. Ready for what? And the man took a small mirror from his pocket and he held it up in front of her face. And he said, close your eyes and look into your own heart. And when you're ready, open your eyes. And when she opened her eyes, the princess, who had never cried, saw that her cheeks were wet with tears. And it was then that she had a glimpse of God. So when I told this story to the fourth grade children at this synagogue school, I invited them to respond to the story. And I asked them first to respond nonverbally, which is one technique I really love to use. So we went around a circle, and if they chose to, they could respond with a gesture. So just some of them put their hands to their heart, or they looked like they were crying, or, they did some kind of physical gesture that the story had, of an image the story had brought to them. And then I asked them to make some personal connections to the story. And what immediately, of course, started happening, because stories stimulate more stories, and several volunteered examples of times they had felt compassion for someone else, a time when they had shared something of theirs with others. They talked about things their families maybe had done, like, oh, there was one time when somebody had a flat tire and my mother stopped to, see what they needed. They came up with specific examples of experiences they had where human beings were being there for one another. And, I thought about this ahead of time, that really what this all was about in terms of teaching compassion and teaching caring was also about giving and receiving. And that one of the things I wanted to convey to them was that in order for someone to be able to give, someone else to also agree to receive, which, as we came to recognize, was often harder and harder to do, a harder thing to ask for help than it is to offer help. So I then was moving on to preparing the students to interview these guests, as I mentioned at the beginning. We were going to have a session a few days later where the parents of the fourth graders would be there too. And I wanted the kids to come up with interview questions for the guests. So I told them that a man would be coming who had lost his wife to cancer a couple of years ago, and that the caring committee of the temple had really helped that family. And I told them about another member who had had shoulder surgery, and she had been helped through that recovery by people from the temple who had offered her, rides to doctor's appointments and things like that. So I gave them like a few little snippets of examples of what the people were going to share with us, but didn't tell them a whole lot. By the way, I also did talk to the guests ahead of time myself by phone, just to sort of coach them in what they might want to share with the children, and think about their stories and think about what they were hoping to get across. And so in order to help the fourth graders think about how to interview, it wasn't just about how to phrase a question, but also about really how to be a good listener. And so, some of that is social skills, like how does your body language convey that you're paying attention and listening? So as a fun way to kind of help to teach that, I modeled an interview in front of them all. And at first I did some silly things like, you know, looking away as I was asking the question, or turning my body away from the person who was talking, interrupting them, you know, doing all sorts of mistakes intentionally, and they had fun pointing those out. And then I asked them, like, what should you do instead? And, you know, of course, they were able to say, like, you should have eye contact, et cetera. And after talking a bit more about, you know, asking open-ended questions that can't be answered with yes or no, and asking follow-up questions, they came up with some really great questions. And, you know, the lovely thing about kids doing this was that they were not too afraid to ask things. They were concerned, like, well, is he going to want to talk about, like, the time his wife died? Is that really okay? And I assured them that, in fact, you know, he wanted to come and talk and share his story. And I have to say that this has been, I've done it now for 5 years at this synagogue each fall, and it's really been a beautiful moment of community building and of healing, because there's a learning going on in all sorts of levels when a congregant comes and shares a story. This one man in particular, Barry, has come 3 times now, and he actually says that it has been healing for him to share the story of how the congregation came together to, they actually provided meals for him and his family for like 3 months. It was kind of remarkable while his wife was in hospice. And, you know, it reminds him of why he's grateful to be part of the community. It also is, you know, the parents are there learning about the work of the caring committee and getting interested in taking part in it, and the children are learning. And the children and the parents of this fourth grade are then, throughout the year, requested, the request goes out, like, if there has been a loss, a family has lost a family member. There, in the Jewish tradition, there are visits to that family's home, which is called, when they're sitting Shiva, what it's called, when they're mourning, you know, during a mourning period. And so we've included children in this process. And a lot of people leave the kids at home. They don't necessarily think of coming, bringing them to a Shiva home. But it's by incorporating this and it's part of life and it's part of the life cycle. There's been some lovely moments of children, especially coming when, say, one of their classmates has lost a grandparent. And what they have reflected on, and we've seen evidence of them learning, is that the importance of showing up and being there for other members of your community at times of need. And so it's there's a number of other ways that I've used story. The third one I wanted to just mention briefly was, at the end of a school year, to reflect on the experiences. And we have a number of other projects that the kids are involved with. They make baby blankets to give to families who have new arrivals. They send condolence cards to people or get well cards. They have done a lot of different creative things to take part. And that's the key thing, I think, is that what's been very successful about it is that I think when learners of any age feel like they're making a difference, that they're not just doing some exercise to, you know, because the teacher said to do their assignment, but they're doing something that's really authentic in the community, that that's just so meaningful and it's something that will stay with them. And what I've also seen is that as the kids go on into the, you know, other grades at the temple, as they get older, the families still have this foundation of understanding, and they continue to show up for each other and have kind of a fluency in what it means to listen to one another and to have compassion and caring. So I think I will stop there and take questions if anybody has any. I did have another story I could tell, but I wanted to stop at this point and open it up to any questions if anybody would like. So I guess you have to unmute so I can hear you.
Yes. Well, I would love to hear more about the kids' reactions to the stories. And you've said a little bit about that, but they've been asking questions, and, you know, did you find that they were able to ask questions that led to more stories, and how did they respond to the stories they heard?
Mm-hmm. You mean when they were doing the interviews with the...
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, first of all, it was always so remarkable. Well, not to me. I mean, those of us who do storytelling know that kids will listen really well when they're interested. But they did. They listened very, very well. And I think that the stories were very moving. There were times when people were moved to tears. And, you know, one of the concerns we had when we first started this was, is this okay to do this with kids who are 9 and 10 years old? And it actually was fine. And no parents ever raised any problems about it. I remember, so this one man, Barry, who I mentioned, who was sharing about his wife being in hospice, and then, you know, he was great at explaining to the kids, you know, how much time it takes to go shopping for food and to prepare meals, and that was all time that would take me away from being with my wife, and that if, you know, by having these meals delivered, it was a way I got more time with her. But then the kids were very concrete. They wanted to know, like, how it worked. And so he explained how there was a cooler on his porch and people would drop off food. And sometimes he didn't even know who had left the food. Sometimes he would see them, sometimes he wouldn't. And he said it was almost like, you know, receiving manna in the desert, that his food just miraculously appeared. And one kid said, well, you know, do you think people really wanted to help you, or they just felt like they should? It was this very kind of honest kid kind of question. And Barry was like, well, you know, sometimes you just should do things because you should and because you know it's the right thing, and you might end up in the end being glad you did it. So I remember one time afterwards, one of the girls in the class started to think about a grandparent who had died several months earlier, and she started to cry, and this was at a point where we had broken into some small groups to have some discussion, and Barry happened to be in this girl Jordan's group, and, you know, he just said, he was just, like, really good with her, like, it's okay to cry, and her mother was very surprised because I guess Jordan hadn't cried when her grandparent had died a few months ago, and here she was crying now. And anyway, you know, the small group just gave her support, and she was fine after a bit, and Barry said to me later, well, that girl just did some grief work that she really needed to do. And, you know, it was really because they'd been given a chance to then say, like, to talk in this small group about what the stories had stirred up for them. So.
Right. Ooh. That's lovely. Anybody else have questions?
Yes, this is Janet Carter. If you have a child who is sort of sitting on the side or doesn't seem to be particularly comfortable with the group or the situation, is there something that you do about such a child?
Well, I guess that's really dependent on the situation. Do you mean, like, in particular uncomfortable with the topic of talking about death, or do you mean just in general in a classroom?
Well, I'm sorry, I came in late, so I don't know what... I heard you tell the story,
mm-hmm.
and it was lovely. I just wonder if you ever encounter children who are not used to having stories told.
Mm-hmm. My experience, really, and I've been telling stories to kids for many, many years. Sometimes you have a child who might have trouble listening, but generally, stories are one of the best ways to reach children who might have trouble sitting in a class otherwise.
Do they know that these stories concern the loss? Is that a topic that they realize is going to take
right.
place?
Right. So what I was saying earlier is that the story I told about the princess was a way to
mm-hmm.
introduce the theme of caring and compassion. And that story actually is not about death, but
no.
But just about understanding that some people, you might want to help others. And so, frankly, I haven't had any problems that have come up like what you're asking. Certainly you have different kids with different learning styles, different needs, and there might be someone who, you know, for whom you have some trouble reaching. But generally, as a storyteller working in a class, I always like to have a teacher present at the same time or an aide or something so that,
mm-hmm.
If there was a particular need to be taken care of, they could do that.
Oh, the famous teacher who's grading papers while you tell. Yes,
hopefully
that one
not.
I've heard a lot.
Yeah. But, you know, I can't, when you're in the process of telling a story, it's hard to interrupt that and address a need. So I always like to have someone else, another adult present. But
mm-hmm.
if I'm in more of the educator mode, I can check in and stop and see what's going on. But, you know, most of the time teachers say, wow, the kids listened so well.
Mm-hmm.
So the effectiveness of storytelling is evident, I think.
Hey, Cindy, this is Tom, and I was interested, just you had mentioned, like, the summary stories, and was that, like, the kids recollecting different things that had happened throughout the course of it, or
yeah.
could you talk about that a little more?
Sure. So I think that So at the end of the conclusion of this whole year of being the Caring Corps, what I've found is that some families everybody's had some exposure to it, some more than others. And I mentioned at the beginning of the call that one of the things that we were encouraging families to do was to visit the home of someone who had experienced a death in the family. And So some of the kids got that experience and some didn't. And so I created a story, which I could tell it's not very long, that would capture some of what had happened in those visits, and also so it kind of would give everybody in the class, the parents and the kids, a chance to understand what that experience was about. So in a way, I'm like recapping the experience for everybody to make sure everybody hears it. But then it also is a way to reflect on what have you learned and what do you know now that you didn't know at the beginning of this year. So, you know,
that'd be great. Maybe you could tell us the story. I bet most people would really like to hear it.
Okay, sure. So would it make sense to ask you to mute your phones again and then unmute them when I'm done? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. So I'm telling this story. It's called Painting, and it's a story I created. At first, I was jealous of Sophie. I went over to her house for a play date, and her grandma was there. I found out her grandma wasn't just visiting, she was living with them. And Sophie's grandma was an artist. She had all this cool stuff. We went down in the basement. That was her studio. And she was painting on this great big canvas, big strokes of bright colors. And she said that we could paint too. Well, she gave me and Sophie some paper. We put it on the floor, and she said, it's okay if you drip. It's okay to make a mess. It's creative. Oh, it was so awesome. I thought Sophie was really lucky. But that was before her grandma got sick. One night, I heard my dad on the phone talking to Sophie's mom. And then I heard my parents talking. It was something about cancer. It sounded bad. Well, I was supposed to go over to Sophie's later that week, and I said, you know, I don't really want to go over there. I don't want to catch the cancer. My dad told me, honey, you can't catch it. It's not contagious. And I mean, I knew that, but I said, you know, I just don't want to catch the sadness. So my parents suggested Sophie come to our house for a play date. And she did. And it was okay, but, like, we just played board games, and it just wasn't so fun like it was at her house. Well, a while later, one day, we were giving Sophie rides home from Hebrew school lots of times to help out, and, well, we pulled up in front of her house, and I saw this man get out of the car there, and he was carrying, like, a plate of something, and I said, is that somebody who goes to our temple? I think I recognize him. Sophie just shrugged. She said, I don't know. There's so many people that have been bringing food over to our house. And so after she left, I said to my dad, you know, maybe we should do that. We could bring them some food. Well, my parents agreed, and that weekend we made some lasagna, and I wanted to bring it right over. So we called up, and they said we could come over, and we brought the food, and Sophie's mom was just so appreciative. She said, this is great. Now I can just spend time with my mom, and I don't have to cook. Sophie asked if I would stay and play for a while, and I said okay. She brought me into her grandma's room. She was just sitting there in her chair. She looked tired, but she looked okay. And she said, come on over. You want to sit and do some painting at the table here with me? Well, we did some watercolor painting. At first, I was using black and dark purple on my paper, and I thought it looked kind of gloomy, so I added some bright orange and yellow, and when I was done, Sophie's grandma said, "I like that painting. Very creative. Can I hang it on my wall?" She hung up my painting and Sophie's too. Well, a few weeks after that, Sophie wasn't in school, and, well, I found out that her grandma had died. My parents said, I didn't have to go to the funeral. I didn't really want to, but they said, you know, there's going to be a Shiva at the house, a time for friends and family to go over and be together with them. I think that you should come. Well, I thought about it, and I thought if that were me, I would like it if Sophie came to my house. So I went over with my parents. We brought some brownies, and I got to eat one in the car on the way over. When we got there, I wasn't sure what to do, but I just watched what my parents did. They went over to Sophie's mom and gave her hugs, and they said, "I'm sorry for your loss." So I gave Sophie's mom a hug and said, "I'm sorry for your loss." "I'm so glad you came," she said. "Sophie's in the other room." So I ran in there. Sophie and some of her cousins were sitting on the floor playing cards, and they said, "We're just going to leave the door open. We don't have to go out in the living room with everybody." So I just sat there with them, and we listened. The grown-ups were saying some prayers and singing some songs, and then we heard them laughing and telling stories about Sophie's grandma. After they were done, well, we were going to say goodbye when Sophie said something to her mom and pulled her aside, and then she said, "Come here." They brought me into her grandma's bedroom. All of her stuff was still there. It felt really strange and empty. And they went over and they took down that painting that was still on the wall that I had made. "Would you like to have it?" Sophie asked. "Okay." And then Sophie's mom had something else for me. She said, "Why don't you take one of these paintbrushes that belong to my mother?" "I would love it," I said. So I brought that home. And I brought them up to my room, and I hung the painting up on my wall. And, you know, I'm thinking, this paintbrush, well, it's going to help me to remember Sophie's mom. And I'm going to keep on painting. So that was the story that I told at the end of the year.
Very sweet. Very sweet. How do the kids respond?
They loved it. And, you know, again, it was some of the parents were weeping, actually. And I think there was just a really nice feeling in the room of feeling good about what they had been a part of this year. And so that was a way that I was kind of helping them to reflect back to them what the experience had been like and make sure all of them kind of had that in common. And then, again, we did, you know, some processing of that story with responsive gestures, with getting a chance to share in small groups, often with parents and kids, like a few of them together. You know, what did it remind you of? Have you had experiences like that? Just a few really basic prompts to help them to then share further. And so that gives you some idea. I think that what I like about the idea of using story for reflecting on learning or reflecting on any kind of experience is that, you know, you have the story structure of kind of different points in time, beginning, middle, end, and you can think about that in terms of, you know, what you knew or didn't know at the beginning of the year and how the year has changed you through these experiences. And so by tracing it and telling about how these experiences have impacted you, it's a way of articulating what you've learned from it. So I hope that gives you a little better idea of what I meant by summary and reflection. I'm using story for that.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's a very tender story. Thanks for sharing it.
Thank you, sure.
Cynthia, this is Lee Yellen.
Hi.
It just sounds like such a great program and one that could be used in lots of settings. But,
yeah.
You know, I find myself a tiny bit cynical because, you know, fourth graders are at this magical age where they're so open to stories and the lessons in stories. There's a kind of compassion at that age where they're starting to be able to think about what someone else might be experiencing in a deeper way.
Yeah.
And then that shifts again to sixth, seventh grade. So I'm wondering if a school had said, we want you to work with the seventh graders, where there's a totally different atmosphere, what kinds of choices might you have made that would be different?
Well, in this particular setting, we actually have built the program in the last 5 years. So we now have children grades 1 through 7 in different types of learning core. So each grade is paired with a committee at the temple. And so there are different ways of learning in each grade and on different themes. So in the 6th and 7th grade, they are paired with the Social Action Committee, and they're very engaged in doing some projects of, you know, out in the greater community, like learning about homelessness or learning stories from, you know, hearing stories of immigrants or different types of, you know, issues about food scarcity. And so, but in those grades as well, we have used the tools of story-based learning. So themes are introduced with stories, interviewing and learning from people's personal experiences still works in those grades. I would make a different choice about a story to tell, though. I wouldn't tell them a story about the princess who never cried. I would tell them, you know, something else. So, but like, for example, I did work with seventh graders 1 year on, I told them an Elijah story. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but from the Jewish tradition, Elijah is someone who's kind of looking out to see, how are you treating one another? Are you treating each other well? And if you're not, maybe would point that out. So, you know, it was a much shorter folktale that was able to get at kind of the theme of how do people treat one another, but also then I brought in a lot of other participation from them in terms of discussion. So, you know, there's different ways I would adjust, certainly, for different age groups.
That sounds great. And you're building, you're scaffolding on what they got when they were younger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Anybody else have questions?
I have Tom back here again. One other question. I'd just like to hear a little bit more about the processing non-verbally. That sounds like a great method, and I was wondering if that's just like a momentary thing, like, you know, a few people make a gesture and then you're done, or does it go on for a while?
It's pretty brief. And I should give credit to a woman named Shirley Pakulis, who taught this to me many, many years ago, as a way to respond, you know, nonverbally, because sometimes we don't necessarily have words right away. So basically, I think as I described it, if we're in a circle, that's easier to kind of see, you know, and I would just look or maybe gesture to each person, and then they have a chance to do a gesture. And, yeah, it may be rather small. It may even be a facial expression. It may be just a posture they assume. And so, yeah, it's very quick, but then each person gets a chance to do it. And then, you know, we can go around again if somebody has one they thought of or wanted to do. So if you wanted to do that, I mean, you can also sort of lay the groundwork, do some more scaffolding, you know, to introduce that as a modality to people. If you have the time ahead of time, like, you know, one of my favorite intro games is to say your name with a gesture and everybody repeats it. And so just to get used to using your face and your hands and your arms and your body, and, you know, you could do various kinds of warm-ups to help people think along those lines if you wanted to. But if not, it's very effective. Even if I get, you know, three people in the circle who want to do a gesture, I feel really excited because I've given them a way to respond that they were comfortable with, and maybe they don't want to raise their hand or talk or, you know, whatever, share it or verbally. So I think also the thing about nonverbal sort of kinesthetic movement as a way of responding is that it's another level of learning the story and the imagery and taking it and making it your own in some way.
Yeah. But I really like that for processing. I've done all kinds of nonverbal stuff for greetings. But I hadn't thought of it for processing, so that
nice.
Just struck out to
oh,
me.
Oh, good.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
So, thank you, Cindy, for your wonderful work. I didn't realize it had been going on so long. It sounds so nice that you get to do it year after year
mm-hmm.
with this and pulling in more and more parents as well as the kids. And I love the story you told about the man who telling his story, reminding him of why he loves the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a beautiful reason for retelling as well.
Yeah, and, you know, he's really asked to come back again and again because, you know, then he's met some young families and then they see each other elsewhere and they remember him. And it makes a connection that wasn't there before. So it's been a nice way to bridge across the generations as well.
It is. I can speak more for churches, but they definitely get kind of clicky. So
yeah.
Really good to do things that bridge the generations and
mm-hmm.
people who might not have much in common.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Hi, Cindy and all. This is Dina Weinstein up in Maine, and I've been listening from the beginning. I really, it reinforces so much our tradition in Judaism and how it lends itself so well to community and what you're doing with the children. It's a wonderful program. I wish we had it in every community. So it's good to hear you again, and I've missed you all. Hi, Lee Allen and Elisa and everybody. So,
hey, Dina. Nice to hear you.
thank you. Thank you so much. Very good stories and wonderful ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate all of you listening, and thank you for tuning in.
You bet. Thank you. And this will be up in on recordings in probably within a couple of weeks. If you want to listen again or